Welcome back to Behind the Panels, the comics podcast where nobody is dead until you see the body. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm not too bad. Yourself, David?
I love that intro. Fantastic. You got the Moog going again. I can feel it.
I've got a Moog on my lap and I'm loving it.
You're setting the mood with the Moog.
Oh, yeah.
All right. First thing we need to do this fine show, Richard, is we need to apologize to the people who did listen to the last episode.
Sorry.
It's taken us a while to get feeds and everything organized on this. So this episode will be coming out only a few days after that last episode came out. Now, this is a beta show at this point, remember, everybody. So we had actually talked about the fact that we were going to talk about Sandman this week. Mm. We're going to put that off another week because we're going to give you some time to catch up.
Let's be honest, Dave, we're giving ourselves time to catch up.
That too. But we do have other things we need to talk about. And I think the first thing that I want to talk about is the Woman in Red.
Now, you're talking about a woman in the comic books, David, not just a woman in red you've seen on
No, it was a girl I saw walking down the street the other day. Yeah. No.
You took photos, of course.
Of course. Yeah. The woman in red that we discussed last week, actually.
Yes.
In the new DCU, in every one of issue one, of the issue ones of the 52, there was a mysterious woman in red. And we talked about last week the fact that she was also in the very last panels of Flashpoint. And the question was, what the hell's going on? Well, it turns out that DC's finally giving us a little bit of a bone to nibble on. At the end of some of the issue twos of the New 52, they now have an article under the DC Comics All Access, you know, that panel that they do, from Bob Harris, the editor-in-chief of DC. And it's a one-page article. It's got a picture of the woman in red and basically says, deep inside the DC offices, there is a wall that has played a very important part in the launch of DC Comics, the New 52. Actually, it's in coordinating editor Liz Gerland's office, which is conveniently located right next to mine or Bob Harris's. On that wall, Liz has collected a page from each of the first issues that debuted in September. Although those 52 pages are all very different, showcasing the fantastic range of characters and styles of the DCU, blah, 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 it says they all have one thing in common, the appearance of a lone, mysterious, hooded figure. And it says, that's right, if you look carefully through each title from last month, you will spot her. And we did. It goes on and says, one of the coolest things for me about the New 52 was that it gave us the ability to work very far in advance. We knew exactly what we wanted to do in terms of connecting Flashpoint to our new universe. Geoff Johns had an amazing backstory for the mysterious woman who appears at the end of Flashpoint number 5. And we had a plan from where we thought she'd go next, but since we had enough time to really think, Jim Lee, Geoff, and I figured out that it was possible to expand this character's next appearance into all of the issue ones. A daunting task to be sure, but a one-time opportunity to do something like this and really drive home how important this character is. Doesn't say what the character does or anything, it just says it's a very important character. So, and it goes on, there's more, but we won't go through it. But basically, it does say that we will see the evolution of this character in the pages of Justice League.
Justice League, they've already said, is their pivotal title. It's their kind of backbone of the whole new DCU.
Absolutely.
So definitely one to watch. And I think, you know, no matter what version of the DCU you've been in, Justice League has always been the book to read, except for that really unfortunate period during the 80s.
There were some good stories in there too.
There was some good stuff, but there was some bad stuff.
Justice League has always been a fun title because they could literally throw anybody they wanted into the mix.
Mm.
And that's what.
And I think that's what's great about it. But there was, since Grant Morrison did his run on the title, it's pretty much been the playground of all the major players in the DCU.
Mm.
So it's kind of like if you can't decide whether you want to collect a Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, you know, money's tight, you can't decide which one you want to get, just get Justice League because you get all those characters at once.
And it'll give you a feeling for each of those characters so that you can then decide which one to branch out on.
Now, except in the new DCU,
I knew you were going there.
because there was an article that was put this week on Newsarama, which is one of the big comics websites out there. It's been around for ages. And it used to be called something before it was Newsarama, but that's an aside. It listed 10 things that it had problems with the DCU, and it didn't just do a list of gripes like most websites did. It actually got people to write in well-thought-out paragraphs about what they thought was wrong with the DCU, and I quite like this list, and I certainly won't read out all of them, but some of the things I liked, and sort of segueing off we're talking about, one of the first gripes was, is this a reboot or not?
That was my question.
Yeah, and we were talking a bit about this last week, but at the moment, we're sort of in this ambiguous phase. Some books are complete reboots, some aren't, some are a bit retro, and that was another one of the complaints, that many of the things about the thing is it's very retro. Some of it isn't actually all that new. Some of it just continues straight on from the last run, and other bits are brand new, but there's actually multiple brand new things. So we don't know which brand new bit is.
And some of them just confused because they're within the same series. They've branched out the books, and some of them continue on, and some of them reboot. So, like, the Green Lantern is carrying on, but the Green Lantern in Justice League is a reboot.
Yeah, so and so we've got situations where, obviously, it the same person in the same universe, but maybe at different points in time. So is confusing. I don't know whether they're doing this for the casual reader so they can jump on at any point or whether there's a master plan involving this mysterious red woman. Yeah. We don't know. But some of the other ones that I pointed out, the ones that we mentioned last week, you know, how much violence there was in the new DCU.
I was surprised by that.
Particularly titles like Animal Man. A lot of evisceration in that.
Yeah, and also, let's not put it past Dark Knight. Sorry, Detective Comics.
Of course. Detective Comics' very first issue's last page, which we spoke about last week, involved one character's face being hung on a wall.
There seems to be a lot of people being ripped apart in the new DC universe.
And this is a complaint that DCU's been having for the last few years, which is it's just gotten too dark. And whether this is a reflection on what people actually want, whether it's responding to people's love of the Dark Knight, the Christopher Nolan films. But to me, I'm not quite sure if dark necessarily equates to violence, whether that has to be there. And by the same token, there's been a lot of sex in the new series as well, which, you know, I don't mind too much.
I don't mind it. They're definitely going for a more adult audience nowadays.
Audience. But adult doesn't necessarily mean sex and violence. And this is a problem that you see in television as well. A lot of the HBO shows, like all quote-unquote adult series, have to have, you know, nudity at least 3 times an episode.
That's why I subscribe.
You're absolutely right. No, I mean, this is stuff we've wanted to see on TV for years, and I'm certainly not complaining. But then again, you do get to a point you say, well, actually, if you're looking at it objectively, that story didn't need a sex scene there.
Well, the prime example of this, of course, is Game of Thrones on HBO recently, where the books are nowhere near as erotic or forthright as the series is. HBO has definitely thrown a lot more nudity and sex in there.
And there's certainly, I mean, Boardwalk Empire, it's sort of we sort of got to a point where we were watching it and it was, we were joking that, well, how many sex scenes would be this episode? 3 or 4? And quite literally, there would be that many scenes per episode. So if you haven't watched Boardwalk Empire, one to watch. But no, but the thing is, it's similar to HBO tells their stories in a very similar way to what modern comic book storytelling does as well. So it's interesting that the comic books have kind of now adopted that HBO style of storytelling, when in many ways that episodic storytelling did come out very much from the pulpy, serialized things that originally appeared in newspapers and comic books as well. So I just find that really interesting. But the other story that I was going to mention that came out this week is that there were 3 psychiatrists.
This sounds like the beginning of a joke.
3 psychiatrists walked into a bar. No, there's these 3 psychiatrists who have said that the new DCU is a perfect place for DC to actually breathe new life into what people think about the mentally ill in comic books, and that we've had some rather negative depictions of the mentally ill in comics over the years. The Joker.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect opportunity for DCU to take this on board. And one of the points that they made, which was quite interesting, was that DC have gone out of their way to make this a more ethnically and sexually diverse universe. So
But is it more sexually diverse, or have they just sexified it up?
Sexified it up, I guess. I mean, I guess, but they've made it certainly more ethnically diverse DCU. I mean, and the same thing happened over in Marvel Comics when they had a Hispanic Spider-Man as well.
Hmm.
And that there seems to be a very conscious thing of that. But then there are other things like mental health issues which haven't progressed as far in comics. And it does seem as though there are certain areas of comics that are a few steps behind television, if you want to keep making that comparison, and that they're not quite as PC yet as the big screen, as it were. Whether or not that's something we want to see in comics, whether that would really change the way that comics work. I mean, comics have always had a very pulpy aspect.
We kind of need our psychos to be psychopathic in comic books. It's kind of the way it is.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise you don't get the Riddler and the Joker and Harley Quinn and so forth if they are realistic depictions of mental illness. We need them to be completely over-the-top psychopaths.
Absolutely. And no, I absolutely agree. But I just thought it was just a really interesting story that came out this week, because it
I think people might be reading into the New 52 just a little bit too much.
And I was about to say, it's sort of indicative that people do take comics quite seriously. So it's maybe an indication that comics have arrived, that people are actually calling on them to set better examples for society.
In that television series, Inc., that you told me to watch, which I thought was brilliant.
There's actually, like I said, those of you who haven't heard of it, this series is called Inc. What's the subtitle again? It's Comic Book Heroes.
Comic Book Heroes Alter Egos or something
Inc. Alter Egos is the series. And it's a 10-part series, I think, that tackles different aspects of comics, from indies to you know, women in comics to violence in comics and all sorts of issues. Brilliant series if you can ever get a hold of it.
Wonderful if you can find it. And there's one comic book writer, I forget, I'm doing this off the cuff, so I've forgotten who it actually was who said it, but I just love the fact that when he finally said, do you know what? He goes, we can talk about all the seriousness in the world, and we can talk about all the messages and you know, all the things that we're supposed to be doing. He goes, but one thing that, you know, I hate to say this to the fans out there, but they're for children.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, they are just supposed to be moral lessons for children. And he goes, absolutely. And people take it so seriously, you know?
And that's the thing.
I disagree with him, though. I think what's happened is it was that, and I think it's developed into a whole different art form.
Oh, yeah, I think since direct marketing to comics happened, certainly with specialist comic stores and certainly the internet, comic books have now been able to be more than just that kiddie storybooks. And in fact, to the point where all of the major comic book publishers actually have a separate kiddie line. Just to cater to that younger crowd to try and get things in, like there's DC Kids and all those sorts of things, just because they realize that their main comic books are not being written for children anymore. They're written by people who grew up with comic books and now want to tell the stories that they always wanted to read.
Well, that's right. They all grew up, and the comic books grew up with them, and they've left the children behind on these ones. So, you know, and that's it is a problem when you think to then go, well, I guess that's why Marvel Comics released Spider-Man and Friends, if you remember that, where it was kind of like the youngified Spider-Man. It was completely out of the continuity, and it was him and, you know, the Hulk and all these other people who were like the friends of Spider-Man. And it was all very young, let's put it that way. And it's kind of fun. They even made a Saturday morning cartoon out of it, you know what I mean? But it's by no means like something to be read seriously.
Yeah, and I think, you know, DCU has done a really good job in keeping their characters front of mind for kids by having excellent animated series over the last 20 years.
Which is the one thing that Marvel can't seem to do.
No, and it's not through lack of trying, but for some reason they've had about three or four different cracks at the Spider-Man animated series in the last couple of years, and they haven't had anything as good. In the 90s, they had some good series.
But even in the 90s, even though the stories were better, they still had really substandard animation. And it's something that Marvel has been stuck with for years, and DC doesn't seem to have this problem. The era of Spider-Man the animated series, Superman the animated series. What's his name?
Bruce Timm.
Bruce Timm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bruce Timm's had his hand all over DC animation for years.
Absolutely.
And you can, and it, there's a sense of quality behind all of it. I've actually got a couple of clips. Let's play these really quickly because this is quite funny. And we'll just throw these out there and say that to give you an idea of how bad Marvel cartoons have been in the past. In the 60s was their first big push. And they released, what did they release? They released Fantastic Four, Thor, Spider-Man, Captain America, The Hulk, and I'm forgetting one. I said Thor. Sorry, my son is sitting beside me. He's trying to help me out. Anyway, there was a whole host of them, and they all lasted, except for Spider-Man, which actually went for, I think, a season and a half or something like that. All the other ones only lasted literally like 10 episodes. Because they were crap, and they were those really bad animated cartoons where it was literally cutouts. And when they would go flying across the screen, it was just a still of them going across the screen. And they had theme songs like this. So here's Iron Man for you. This is Iron Man from the 60s. Are you ready? Here we go.
Let's do it. Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel. As Iron Man, all jets ablaze, he's fighting and smite with repulsor rays. Amazing armor. There's Iron Man.
As only the 60s could deliver us. But that's not my...
Believe it or not, David, the one you forgot and how you could forget this, you're going to kick yourself.
Yeah.
Prince Namor the Submariner.
Oh, of course, I forgot. Oh, my God. But I got to say...
Which played on Fridays in the Marvel Superheroes lineup.
Oh, there you go. Well, I got to say, my favorite theme of them all, the most inappropriate theme of them all, has to go down to this one. The ever-loving Hulk. I just love, ain't he unglamorous?
Get dealt by glamorous.
I've actually had the pleasure of going back and seeing some of these cartoons again. I'm just sitting there going, I used to watch these when I was a kid. And all I can think is, what was I thinking?
Oh, it's a toy, David.
But, you know, DC have had their share of crap from the 60s as well. I mean, they've... put out. I mean, they had
they did,
you know,
it in live action, though, to be to have a little bit of quality. They did it in live action with the 66 Batman series, and
that's true. Yeah,
and the what was the era? The 1940s or 50s Superman series.
Yes, that's right. They did.
You know this one.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Yeah, you know that one.
You know, look, they've both had their fair share of shaky. I mean, look, you know, the Marvel we know today is a far cry of
80 glamorous.
80
unglamorous.
It's a far cry from that. You know, though Hulk has still been a bit wobbly on the big screen.
That's true. They haven't actually quite solved the Hulk 100% on the big screen. But, you know,
He's still a little unglamorous.
As far as the big screen goes, I mean, Marvel is dominating.
With the exception
of Tim Burton's first two Batmans and then Nolan's Batmans. I mean, they've basically sewn up the cinema. And when it comes to television, though, DC is kicking their butt.
The DC unit of stuff on television has been strong. I mean, look, the Batman animated series kind of set the mold for all of this. Well, it did. It set the mold back when it was released in the early 90s. And that was, I mean, the animation, the use of light on that was amazing. And they've kind of used that style ever since. The Superman animated series wasn't quite as good, but they really hit their stride from about the Justice League onwards.
And do you know what, though? Do you know what? I will give the Tim generation of cartoons, though, and that is his voice casting, though.
Oh, it's been amazing.
And that's what's really sold them. Aside from the fact that the animation has been really slick, it's not that cheap, send it overseas and get it back, you know, almost looking like Flash animation. It's really quality animation, but he's assembled a great voice talent on every one of his projects. Kevin Conroy.
So we had Mark Hamill there for a while doing voices.
Absolutely. Mark Hamill doing the Joker. We've got Kevin Conroy as Batman. I mean, you know, Kevin Conroy for me is the voice of Batman. He's just the best of them all, even the movies, Batmans. You know?
And they've used both of those guys when they've done the DCU games as well, the recent Batman Arkham City game. It was Kevin Conroy and what's allegedly Mark Hamill's last turn as the Joker.
I have news on that, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit of news on that. Mark Hamill was asked if it was really his last, one, and he came out and he had a correction to make, and he basically said that he had a lot of fun with Arkham City, and of course, if they were making another game, he would come back and do Joker again.
Right.
So if they did another game, he'd come back. And then the reporter, I can't remember where this was reported now. I'll have to find it and put it on the site, where the reporter asked him, but what if they did, like, you know, Alan Moore's The Killing Joke as a cartoon? And he goes, no, of course I'd do that. So in other words, it was his last Joker unless something good comes along. Which I thought, yeah, way to keep your doors open there, Mark. Oh dear!
Yeah, but he's done a marvelous job. He even played the Joker briefly, and I don't know if you ever remember seeing the series.
Oh yes, I know what you're going to say.
Birds of Prey.
Yeah, he was in the first episode, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. Which was a really weird series.
Never grabbed me. I only saw the first two episodes, I think, and thought, I can't do this anymore.
I only watched it because I'm such a huge Birds of Prey fan for the actual comic book, which at the time was being written by Chuck Dixon, and it was a much different book to what we have now. But it was a lot more lighthearted and fun, and they'd actually changed it. For some reason, they made Black Canary a kid in that, who had psychic powers,
right.
I think.
Oh,
and
I
the Huntress...
That.
Was the adult character, was effectively the role that Black Canary has in the comic book.
They were going with the original concept, weren't they?
Of the
Huntress. Because the original concept of the Huntress, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's going back quite a long time. My mind's a little shaky here. But wasn't she originally from Earth 2?
That's
right. She was the daughter of Batman Catwoman.
That's right.
Yeah, yep. That's right, and
she was Helena Wayne then, I think, and then she was, but she's now, I think, in the new one, she's like Helena Bertinelli. She's like the daughter of a mob boss or something.
That's right. In the mini series that came out a couple of years ago, they changed her whole origin.
That's right.
And the new Birds of Prey from the last, basically the last volume, not this new reboot, but the last basic reboot, I guess. She was the mobster's daughter. She was no longer this Batman relation.
That's right.
I don't know what they're doing in the New 52 because they've just launched her new miniseries. So they're relaunching the Huntress now.
I've just found when I was looking up the Huntress, and we have to find footage of this, the sound for next week. There was something in 1979 played on NBC called The Legends of the Superheroes.
Oh, sounds good.
And Barbara Joyce played the Huntress. And they've got her here in full costume, which is bright pink. And it seems to be live action. It was two specials. It had Frank Gorshin in it reprising his role as the Riddler from Batman.
God, he would have been a million years old.
Sorry?
He would have been a million years old.
In 1979?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, he was already fairly old when he did Batman in 66.
It sounds like it had all the thing. It had Garrett Craig as Captain Marvel. It had Howard Murphy as Green Lantern. Bill Knuckles as Hawkman, Barbara Joyce as the Huntress, as we've said. Ron Hassey as the Flash, Alfie Wise as the Atom.
Oh, we have to get this.
And Danuta Rilico Soderman as Black Canary. So that's that was the main thing, and it was two episodes called The Challenge and The Roast. And the second episode was a celebrity roast of the superheroes hosted by Ed McMahon.
Oh, gotta see this. If anybody out there has a copy of this or knows where I can get it, let me know.
It's available on DVD, apparently.
Oh.
It came out last year. Warner released it. They released it as part of the Warner Archive collection, so I don't know whether that's actually...
Oh, the Warner Archive's really cool because they actually burn discs to order.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is available, so it's out there somewhere. So we'll have to get a hold of this.
We got to find it. We got to see if we can dig that up. There was also that mid-90s telemovie of Justice League of America, which actually had David Ogden Steers playing Martian Manhunter. A very chubby Martian Manhunter.
Oh, yeah.
It was really bad. So, yeah, no, look, there's been a lot of failed television attempts at comic books. We're seeing if this is the golden age for comic books coming to media. It really is.
I found a picture from that Justice, the 1997 Justice League.
I'll let you on a little
Green Lantern's blue.
Yeah, I have that. I have that movie.
I'll have to
get you a copy of that movie. Oh, I'll loan you my copy of that movie because it is really funny. It's so bad. I want to see that other one, though. That other one sounds absolutely quality.
I'll bookmark that so we don't forget it.
Fantastic. All right, this week, because we can't talk about Sandman, we thought we would talk about... we gave a lot of time to DC last week. So I thought this week we would talk a little bit about Marvel. But not just any old Marvel. I thought we would address Marvel Max. And in particular, one title from the Marvel Max series. For those who don't know what Marvel Max is, it's Marvel spread their wings basically and did a really adult range of comics at one point. I don't think they're still doing Max, are they?
No, I think they've got rid of that now.
They got rid of it. So they did a short run, six-issue run of Howard the Duck under the Max label, which I read recently, which is actually quite funny. they did Nick Fury, just called Fury, which was actually Warren Ellis, I think.
I think you're right.
They did a X-Men Phoenix Legacy of Fire, which was all in like anime style.
It was Garth Ennis, actually.
Garth Ennis. X-Men Phoenix Legend of Fire, which was a three-part miniseries where it was all done in like anime style, and it was very strange.
They did a whole lot of Punisher stuff, which was also Garth Ennis, I think.
Yeah, they did Punisher...
Born.
Yeah, that's right. They also had another one. Is it Punisher versus the Marvel Universe?
Now, I'm not sure if Punisher versus the Marvel Universe. Did you manage to catch up with that?
I haven't. I'm actually reading it now. I don't know if it's the same one you were telling me about. This is the one where the whole Marvel Universe are turning into zombies.
No, this is different. The one I found was called The Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
I'm still trying to get my hands on that one.
Which is, I've got in a very, it's a very slim, it's kind of one of those prestige format books. And it's basically the Punisher has had enough. And it's sort of like when the Punisher gets pushed too far. So this is, you know, extreme stuff. Right. And he decides that none of the heroes are willing to admit fault when, you know, everyone gets caught and killed in the middle of some crossfire between the Avengers and some alien invaders in the park. So, you know, so Frank Castle in his infinite wisdom decides that it's the superhero's fault, so they have to go. So one by one, he decides to kill them all off. And this is another one written by Garth Ennis. With it's got a cover by Steve Dillon, who works with Garth Ennis a lot, but the pencils are actually done by Doug Braithwaite, and it's insane. It's absolutely crazy. And how an immortal character, you know, through his regeneration is killed off, is quite creative.
Oh, very good.
Yeah,
there was also a range of comic books that came out. Which I haven't read yet, but I'm fascinated by it. The series was called The End. And basically it was hypothetical, the end of the Marvel Universe.
That's right.
And so there was Fantastic Four, The End, X-Men, The End, The Hulk, The End, and so forth. What I love about it, though, is we were talking about the Max comics. The only one of those that's actually a Max comic is The Punisher. So Punisher, The End, was a Max comic.
That's right.
So one can only imagine what is in this
comic. And guess who it was written by?
Oh, who was it written by?
Garth Ennis.
Of course it was.
Well, Punisher specialist. He wrote a really good run of The Punisher, which is Welcome Back, Frank.
Yeah.
And he very much took kind of the sense of humor and sensibility that he injected into the Preacher comics. And brought that into the Marvel U, and that was very much what the first Punisher movie, the one with, not the first Punisher movie. Sorry, I should say the second
Warzone,
Punisher
movie. Warzone.
Well, no, not Warzone.
You mean the first reboot, basically.
The first reboot, yeah. The 2004, I think it was.
Yeah, the one with oh God, his name has gone out of my head. The one that had Roy Scheider as his father, and the Deep Blue Sea guy.
what's his name?
It's gone out of my head.
I know. I'll look it up while we're talking. And that was basically a lot of the characters that were introduced in that series were in that film, including the whole idea of him living in an apartment block with a bunch of crazy people. Mm. It is worth a read because it is obviously does it a lot better. Thomas Jane is the name
Thomas
of the actor.
Thomas Jane, thank you.
Oh, God, that was going to haunt me. He was in a TV series recently called Hung,
Yes, it's still on. He's just started its third season.
Yeah. Excellent. Because I've only caught up with the first two, so I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, no, it's just come back recently. So,
oh, that's good. I'm glad it's come back because it was going somewhere. So I mean, look, you know, we've had patchy history on both of them, but yeah, as you said, Marvel Max is I was actually collecting Marvel comics seriously at the time Marvel Max first launched, so I actually have a lot of those issues at home.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I should say at home, in my old home, at my I've got them all boxed up at the moment, as right. You should do with your comics, keep them bagged and boarded. And I recommended this title to you because I thought you'd enjoy it, and I did. It's a very interesting book, isn't it?
Yeah.
And let's put it this way: the first line on the first page of Alias is "fuck,"
and it's uttered many more times after that.
Absolutely.
So the series we're talking about is Alias, of course, and the thing that got me fascinated about this was that I didn't know the character. And as I was reading it, I actually realized that I had seen the character in various Marvel stories because she is in Civil War and so forth, but always in the background. And I didn't realize that this character was a major character. And I'm not even sure because for those who don't know, the character is Jessica Jones. And she's a private investigator who does have superpowers but has basically turned her back on the world of superheroes. But she is morbidly depressed most of the book. She just hates her life. She hates everything about herself. She hates the way she looks. She drinks too much. She swears. She doesn't like people. She's a wonderful character because the thing about the book is she's growing throughout the book. And by the end of the book, she's actually quite a confident person who has kind of come to terms with her life. And she's also found love, which we'll go into in a minute with the spin-off book that goes out of that.
Yes.
But which isn't as solid a book. But Alias is a really, really solid piece of storytelling. And other fact, it's 28 issues long.
28, yep.
But it's broken down, so you can actually read it, because it's actually, I think, four individual stories over multiple issues. So, like, the first story is the first four issues or five issues, which revolves around Captain America. And then she goes into one which is about a child who's been kidnapped in a country town and how she doesn't relate to anybody in the country town.
Yeah.
She hates them all. Yeah. But I did. There's a humor through this book that I really, really love. I love the fact that there's one point where she's being questioned by a police officer and the cop basically says, "So you used to be a superhero?" She goes, "Yeah." He goes, "So you got superpowers?" She goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Are you strong?" She goes, "Stronger than you." He goes, "Is that a threat?" She goes, "No, you asked me." And he goes, "Can you fly?" She goes, "Well, I can take off. Landings are a bit shaky." I just love that. I love the fact that she just doesn't care, or feigns the fact that she doesn't care. But as the book goes on, you also get to meet all these sub characters because she does part time bodyguard work for Matt Murdock, who of course is Daredevil, and she has a lot of interactions with Luke Cage.
Some rather intimate interactions in the first issue.
In the first issue. But what's really interesting is they have that first issue where they have those intimate, very intimate interactions. And then Luke Cage doesn't come back for many, many issues when she starts doing the bodyguard work for Matt Murdock.
That's right.
And there's the relationship between them is a really interesting relationship because they allow it to grow organically. And it doesn't just kind of go, okay, they're now together, they should be together. She kind of gets to know him, and he gets to know her, and it's spread out over many, many issues. So when they finally do kind of go, yeah, I like you, and even in they don't actually admit their love for each other until the follow-up series. It's so kind of like, yeah, I like you. It's like, whatever.
But the thing I really like about the series, and it was actually one of the constraints that was placed on the writers of the series, was that because it was in the Marvel Max line, they couldn't really use – they weren't allowed to use the Marvel superheroes very much.
Although they do make an appearance.
They do make an appearance, but if you look through it, it's careful. Like in a lot of the issues where that are involving Captain America, you see him in photos a lot of the time, or there's a run, if memory serves, where J.J. Jameson asks Jessica to find out the identity of Spider-Man.
One of my favorite issues, actually.
Sorry?
One of my favorite issues, actually, because the entire thing is written in script form.
That's right.
So it's just still pictures, basically, and the script is running down the edges of the pages, and it's all about him basically saying, so you're a private investigator and you know the superhero, so we want you to find out about the identity of Spider-Man. And she just basically says, go to hell, but he keeps offering her money until she finally decides to do it. And then it goes on from that point about the fact that, is she really doing it or is she just ripping Jonah off? And it's actually a very funny conclusion to that issue, especially considering the follow-up series.
Well, and the follow-up series, which is called The Pulse, was back in the proper Marvel U, or the Marvel 616 universe, if you want to geek out.
Yep.
Which we will.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the first issue has like Spider-Man swinging across the cover, so it's kind of it's firmly establishing that they're back in the proper universe. Much like, and I have to invoke Green Arrow at this point, because back in the late 80s, DC did something very similar with their mature readers line.
Right.
And Mike Grell took Green Arrow right out of the DCU and actually had him living in Seattle with Black Canary, completely separate from it. And they were just doing stuff in a very realistic setting there. And for the first 80 issues of this, all of which were written and penciled by Mike Grell, he was in complete isolation from the rest of the DCU. And now while Jessica Jones isn't isolated from the rest of the Marvel U, it very much feels like it's its own pocket of the universe. It doesn't,
it's interesting. There is actually there, and whenever it does go into, like, there's a sequence of issues, it's kind of reaching the conclusion of the Alias series where she has to confront some demons because we find out her background, which we don't really know much about. All we know is that she used to be a superhero named Jewel, who I was actually trying to look her up. I don't think has actually ever appeared in a comic book. That's a made-up character that they made up for Jessica Jones so that they could have this background for her. Because I was looking through her Wikipedia entry, and I can't seem to find anything on Jewel actually appearing in a comic book.
It actually says first appearance, according to Wikipedia, was Alias number one. So.
Right, well, there you go. So she's a made-up fictional character. Well, I should say they're all made-up fictional characters, but she's made up for this series. And there's actually a sequence in it where there is a flashback to her actually being that character, and the entire art style of the comic book changes. It's almost like we step back into the real Marvel universe for a minute there. It all becomes very colorful and cartoonified, whereas the rest of the artwork in Alias is very dark and moody and kind of watercolory. And so it's got this very different feel. So it's really interesting how they've differentiated the two worlds. And then when we step into The Pulse, which is the follow-up series, it's completely back into cartoon world. And the style of the characters, everybody looks different. Jessica Jones is suddenly no longer dark and brooding and moody. She actually looks like a comic book character.
Well, I think they've actually got Mark Bagley to do the art on The Pulse, which was the follow-up series.
Yeah.
And Mark Bagley did worked with Brian Michael Bendis, who's the writer on both these series. He worked with him on the Ultimate Spider-Man thing for about 100 issues of that.
Oh, it's definitely there is definitely a style crossover.
And in fact, I was just reading that Bendis introduced her into the Ultimate Marvel U as well in one issue of Ultimate Spider-Man. So there you go. There's a bit of crossover.
There you go. A little bit of crossover there. Mm. So in the book Alias, as I was saying, in the later part, she has to confront some demons, and there's actually this whole sequence where she does interact with the Avengers, and and actually, at the end of the first storyline, so I think it's like issue 3 or 4, maybe even 5, she actually meets Steve Rogers. And she has to actually talk to Steve Rogers. So they do bring those characters in, but you're right, they're kept in the back. It's like when she talks to Matt Murdock, we never actually see Daredevil.
I was going to say that. I was talking to you before. She's Matt Murdock's bodyguard, obviously.
That's right. It's like that all the way through the book. We're always hearing about what's going on, but the interactions with these people are actually are limited because they want to keep it into this realistic world. One thing I will say about Alias is that the language is phenomenal. The woman's got a mouth on her, let me tell you.
It's actually certain characters they weren't allowed to use, apparently. So it says here they were allowed, for example, to use many of Marvel's they were not allowed, for example, to use many of Marvel's most famous characters, such as Spider-Man, with the exception of one cameo.
Oh, okay.
And apparently Bendis gave this as one of the reasons that he actually ended the series at issue 28 and moved it over to The Pulse.
So that he could have the other characters in there.
Mm.
Interesting, interesting.
But the pulse didn't last as long.
I've got the numbers here. The pulse actually only lasted 11 issues or something like that, I think. So.
It's about half as long. 14, according to Wikipedia.
Yes, 14 issues, and then there was a couple of crossovers. Jessica Jones appears in a few issues of New Avengers because Luke Cage, her husband, joins the New Avengers, and their wedding is actually in the first New Avengers annual.
Well, there you go.
So they actually call it a Pulse special. And it's like that New Avengers annual number one was the conclusion to the Pulse storyline. So Pulse actually, at the end of the last issue of Pulse, it actually says to be concluded in New Avengers annual.
Right.
So that's where they go. There's also a What If comic, which I read just the other day, which I thought was fantastic. In the Alias series, there's actually a sequence because she deals with S.H.I.E.L.D. a lot. She actually sleeps with one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents at one point. But she deals with S.H.I.E.L.D. a lot. And one of the storylines is we find out that she was actually offered a job because she has superpowers and she does have connections and so forth. And she's shown a lot of strength. You have to read the comic books to find out why. There is a definite storyline there. But apparently she was offered to work for the Avengers to be the S.H.I.E.L.D. liaison for the Avengers. And she turned them down because she didn't want to have anything more to do with costumes. Basically.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that there's a What If comic that came out a little while later, which actually is called What If Jessica Jones Had Taken the Job? Or What If She Had Joined the Avengers? And it kind of goes into what would have happened to her character if she had taken that job. And it goes in a very different direction to the way that Alias took her.
Yeah, and one of the things I think Alias would be, it's interesting, they've been adapting a lot of series to the screen, obviously. We're talking about television. I think it would make a really good television series. And in fact, when I was just as I was thinking that, I found that apparently last year, and as recently as December last year, that the Twilight screenwriter Melissa Rosenberg was apparently developing a series for the networks called AKA Jessica Jones.
Interesting. So, because that actually goes into a little bit in line with what I heard, which was about a month ago. I heard that there's three Marvel properties, I should say, one we already knew about, but there's three Marvel properties that are heading to the television screens, one of which is The Incredible Hulk, which is going to be produced by Guillermo del Toro.
Hang on, what isn't being produced by Guillermo del Toro?
Well, fair enough. apparently Guillermo del Toro is adapting The Incredible Hulk to television, and it will be within the continuity of the Marvel Universe films. So they're taking that character into television. And the other two recently announced were a new Punisher series.
That's right.
Fox is going to air, but it's being produced by ABC, of course, because ABC is owned by Disney. And
Disney owns Marvel.
And Disney owns Marvel, of course, and we don't know at this point what that's going to be like because they've completely changed the story because apparently he's going to be a cop by day and the Punisher by night, which just goes against everything Frank Castle's about.
and a lot of people have speculated it's because Fox wants their own version of Dexter.
Yeah, and it sounds exactly like that. And the other one that I thought was the most exciting one, of course, was that there has been talk about a Jessica Jones TV series, which could be related to the one that you heard about a year ago.
Now, it would be, I think it's probably one of the more obvious properties to adapt because it's not a huge property. So it's not one that they would risk sort of sullying any potential future films with. Mm. And I think having an Incredible Hulk TV series is a little bit of a risky prospect. But then again, the Incredible Hulk TV series, the original one, was incredibly successful and quite famous.
Absolutely.
And the films, as we've already discussed, not so good.
The second one was better than the first, but
the second one was better than the first, but it didn't quite click with audiences. And so there were still massive storytelling problems in it, which the other Marvel films haven't suffered from.
No, that's true. You're absolutely right.
I was just going to say just quickly on that. I think the big difference is it's really hard to sell a character when half the time on the screen they're not the character that you know. They're actually, they turn into a big green rage monster, in the words of Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. And I particularly like the way you turn into a big green rage monster.
Why, thank you.
I actually saw, just as an aside, I saw recently the Swedish version of the Avengers.
Oh, really?
Of the Avengers trailer. So dig this up if you can.
Look at that.
And it was basically, it starts off, you know, when it does, you know, really crappy special effects and handheld helicopters and stuff. But when he comes in and says, you know, you're just a silly man in a tin suit. What else have you got? It's like, you know, billionaire, genius, philanthropist, playboy. And then Hulk goes, ha, ha, sorry, it's Thor says, ha, 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 I don't know what any of those words mean. So it's quite good if you can find that. But yeah, no, I think the problem, as I was saying, with the Hulk is that you're not. It's the Hulk that's on screen. The Hulk is the character, but then we've got nothing to connect to with the Hulk. It's kind of like it's cool when Hulk goes smash.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of people complained he didn't do in the Ang Lee version of Hulk. He didn't go smash enough. But then in the Louis Leterrier version, that's right. Which is now part of which is now canonical in the new Marvel universe, except for the fact that the actors changed again.
It's almost becoming tradition, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because apparently, yeah. Mark Ruffalo will not play it in the TV version.
What was that, sorry?
Mark Ruffalo won't be in the TV version, so exactly, they'll be changing right. Banner again.
Yeah. So the thing is, in that movie, he did go smash. I found he went smash too much. It's kind of like, you know, it's boring to watch a movie where a big green monster smashes stuff up for 2 hours. So you need character development. So you really need to have that balance.
Character development. I loved all the smashing parts. That wasn't my problems with that movie.
They were kind of cool. I'll give you that. But as a long-running TV series, you do need a lot more. And I think something like Alias obviously lends itself to the small screen because it's effectively an investigative, you know, film.
Well, absolutely. And this is why the original television series of The Incredible Hulk, as cheesy 70s as it is, works so well and was so popular because basically it was just the same formula as Kung Fu, which was also an incredibly successful 70s
That's
television
right.
series.
He was just wandering the earth.
Which was, yeah, going from adventure to adventure by wandering across America, you know, and he got to discover new things. And we were following Banner. We weren't following the Hulk.
No, and I think that's exactly what it is. So I think the casting of Banner is going to be incredibly important.
Yeah, as is the casting of Jessica Jones. If you get the casting of her wrong, this series fails. Because she is the pivotal thing in this series. Everything else is going around her, but we're seeing the world through her eyes. And she's such a great character that it's going to be very hard to find somebody. What I thought was really amusing, though, I have to say this really quickly, though, is that when I finished Alias and I went on to Pulse, and my immediate it's almost a jarring experience going into Pulse because the art style is completely different to start with. Mm. And then the first thing you notice right off the bat is it's sanitized because now it's in the Marvel Universe. And as they went through, the first couple of issues are quite sanitized, but they obviously realized that Jessica Jones has to have the mouth that she has and she has to have the guts that she has. So I have never seen so many hash question mark exclamation points used in a single comic book because they just started to make her swear again like crazy, especially when dealing with J. Jonah Jameson. And they couldn't put the swearing, obviously, so they just literally little symbols all over the page. It's quite funny.
Let me ask you this, David. How do you think an Alias TV series would affect the chances of Isaiah Mustafa's, which is the Old Spice guy, his version of the Luke Cage?
Do you know what? Yeah. I would cast him as Luke Cage in Alias. That's yes. That's what I would do. Because I think he would be perfect in Alias.
I'm on a superhero.
Oh, dear. Yes, for those who are listening to us and not quite sure, Nikki just got that joke. He's starting to laugh. You're too young to get that joke. For those who don't know, Luke Cage, of course, is Power Man, which was one of those redundant characters from the 70s who they managed to have successfully resurrected. Because in the 70s, it was Luke Cage, it was Power Man and Iron Fist. And Iron Fist was so obviously just a cash-in on the Bruce Lee craze of the time. Yeah. And he had a partner. And, of course, Luke Cage was done in good 70s style with a bright yellow shirt and a big chain around his waist. And you know, it was all very pimpish. You know what I mean?
Interesting factoid, Jessica Jones is now known as Power Woman in the Marvel Universe.
Really?
Mm.
Has she started to do things again? Or I thought she'd given it up.
This is my understanding is that she's now... It's because according to the Wikipedia entry, which is highly reliable, she's used the aliases Jewel, Nitrous, and currently Power Woman.
Yeah, we know about nitrous because that's actually in Pulse. She talks about that. Mm. That she was that for one night.
Right.
It was her. She said that very little is known about it, but she actually attempted to be as a kind of where she first met Luke Cage. And it's this history lesson where she goes out on patrol one night as this character and, of course, realizes that by the end of the night that this is not what she's cut out to do.
Here we go. Here's the explanation to that. Jessica, retaking her costume identity of Jewel, became a member of the New Avengers when the title relaunched in June 2010. In New Avengers number 8, which would have been, the start of this year, Jessica takes the name Power Woman to both honor her husband, Power Man, Luke Cage, and to be a role model for their daughter.
Ah, okay. So putting on tights and going out and being a superhero is being a good role model. Okay.
I think it's more the Power Woman
the
thing.
The Power Woman thing. I would have said, be a successful businesswoman running your own detective agency might have been a better role model.
Look, chances are they're going to have superpowered kids.
Very true. Actually, that's a question that is raised in Pulse, but of course, it's too early to tell.
Mm.
She does give birth from memory, the New Avengers special, which is where she gives birth. I think she gives birth to her child within 5 months or something like that because of the accelerated superpowers.
Right.
And she goes into labor way early, and she gives birth to a perfectly healthy child. So
that's a superpower.
There you go. There you go. She can pump out more children faster.
I can pump out two a year.
I also was trying to figure out
Super Breeder.
I was also trying to work out the timelines because Jean Grey is actually in Alias.
Yes.
And if you go back, Jean Grey would have been gone already by that time. So I'm trying to figure out the continuity of this, where it fits into the world. But
that's right. She was in the Purple Man storyline, wasn't she?
That's right, which is actually a really, really harrowing storyline.
Oh, yes.
and that was the conclusion to it, really.
That was
kind of what brought it all to a head, because that's when she's talking about her past and explains the whole thing about how and why she's no longer a costume superhero and all to do with this Purple Man. And it's harrowing because it's all about mind control and stuff like that. And this is how Jean Grey comes into it. Not for children. Definitely not for children, that particular sequence, because it's really rough around the edges. my son is going, can I read it?
What
did daddy just say? Tell you what, on your 15th birthday,
I'll buy you a beer and a copy of Alias.
Maybe not the beer, but I'll give you a copy of Alias. anyway, they actually talk about in this Wikipedia article, they talk about the what if Jessica Jones had joined the Avengers. That's a really fun issue. If you haven't read that, that's well worth having a look at.
I haven't actually read that one.
Yeah, so we'll have to get you a copy of that one at some point so you can have a look at it, because that's actually a lot of fun because it's completely off the cuff. And it's actually one of the very few what ifs that I've read which isn't The Watcher.
Mm.
So it's not kind of like The Watcher going in the great scope of the world, and you know how The Watcher does all that sort of nonsense, right? This is just two guys sitting at a bar, sitting at a coffee shop, and Jessica Jones is there, and they're talking at the bar, and they're saying, hey, that's Jessica Jones over there. And they start talking, they say, she was once asked for a job for the... And they're just talking, they're saying, how would life have turned out had she taken that job? And it's all about kind of them just talking to each other. And them speculate, and it's a really, really good issue.
That's cool.
So I liked that a lot. I thought that was a really good issue. So well worth having a look at. Well, all right. Well. Now, next week we're going to do the Sandman thing.
Yeah, we'll do that next week.
We are going to do it, yes?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm trusting you on that one.
All right.
So we do have a new email address, Richard. So if anybody, yes, we do. So if anybody wants to send us email, you can send it to comics@geekactually.com. That's comics with a C, with an S. So comics, plural. So if you've got any recommendations for us, or you want to talk about the things that we've talked about, or you've got any comments about the show, remember, this is a beta show. We are still developing this show on the fly.
It's very beta.
The idea was, we said we can sit here and rehearse it and figure it out, or we could just do it live and figure it out,
yep.
And let it mutate into what it will finally become. That's kind of
I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. So that's what we're doing, and so we're going to rely on the listeners as well to help us shape this show. As you'll hear, there's temporary music at the beginning, and there's, you know, we're all over the place at this point. But
let's build this together, people.
Let's build it up and let's make the best show we can. And as we said, a big portion of the show is about being a book club, about being a reader club, and that's why we're saying read Sandman issues 1 to 8. And that's what we're going to talk about next week, spoilers and all. Like, we've been dancing around trying not to do spoilers for Alias because we didn't announce that's what we were going to talk about.
Mm.
But with Sandman, we're warning you in advance. That's what we're talking about. Right? And we'll be doing spoilers and all. So
call this, rather than a book club, we'll call this episode a big recommendation to check out Alias if you haven't already.
Absolutely, yes. If you haven't read Alias, it is one well worth getting. And now, I heard it's on Comixology, so if you are a digital reader, but I couldn't find it.
Okay.
So you guys need to do a little bit of research and see if you can dig it up. If not, it will be in print somewhere.
Are there regional restrictions with Comixology? Like, can we in Australia get things that not get things that are available in the US?
I actually didn't think there were.
But no, nor did I, because everything else seems to be day and date.
That's right. I'm looking at Comixology right now. I'm just firing up the Marvel app, because Marvel app is actually the Comixology app, but specifically for Marvel content. You can actually check out the DC app. There's a Image app now. I think there's a Dark Horse app. They're all made by Comixology. So they're all basically the same app, but just customized for the actual groups. And they're worth going to, because sometimes there's stuff on the Marvel one that Comixology might not be carrying because it's Marvel putting it out. So I'm just doing a quick search now. So it's worth searching all of them. So let's have a quick look here and say store. What's going on here?
Mine just crashed.
Yours just crashed. Oh, dear. All right. So I'm just having a quick look here. I'm going to type in Alias and see if we have any... See, we're not getting anything in the search for Alias, which is just bizarre. Stay away from the soundboard, you. my son is heading for the soundboard again. Just stay away from
it. I can't find it either.
No, it's very strange. So I'm just going into series here.
If I browse now, it's not in there either.
No, it's not an Alias. No. Anyway, so I heard that they had released them all on Comixology. For some reason, I can't find them. So maybe somebody out there can tell us what's going on with that. But if you can find it, as I say, comic book shops, I'm sure by now it's probably in a trade paperback. It has to be.
Oh, it's definitely in a trade.
Yeah.
In fact, I think... Keep talking while I look this up.
All right, I'll keep talking. So I think you're doing shopping, are you?
I'm going shopping, but I think that you can not only get this in a trade paperback...
In graphic novel form, basically.
Yeah. You can certainly get it in the various story arcs, but they've released Alias the Ultimate Collection, which I think collects... there was an Alias Omnibus Edition that was released a few years ago. I think that's out of print now.
Oh, that's a shame.
And that was, I think, everything. And Marvel have done some terrific Omnibuy. I don't think that's a word, but
I was sitting there listening, you said it, and I went... That's great. I don't know if it's real.
It's not a real word. That was, look, if you can get it, whether it's secondhand or I think you can buy it. Jesus. You can buy it through the Amazon stores. Have actually got it for about $250. Like, people are selling this thing off. So it's definitely out of print.
$250?
Yeah, $250. And some of them are going up as high as $399. It's a 600-page Marvel hardcover.
It is 28 issues plus 14 issues of Pulse plus specials. So
I don't know if it's got all the Pulse stuff in there, but it's certainly got it collects 1 to 28, the What If issue. That's what it collects.
Okay. I just found Alias, by the way, on eBay.
Well, there you go.
I'm looking through eBay right now. You can buy it per issues. Trade paperback. Here we go. 2003, 2004. There's a trade paperback number 4. So that must be the fourth story arc, I would imagine. $9.
There you go.
Ultimate
collection. So hit up eBay, because I don't think that they're actually selling these things anymore in trade paperbacks.
Here you go.
There still seems to be a couple left in stock.
Alias, issues 1 to 28, individual issues. Buy it now, price $48.
There you go. Do that.
Yeah, so there you go. So, look, it's all over eBay. I'm looking at eBay. There's dozens and dozens of entries. So, it is gettable is what we're saying. So it is well worth.
It's around.
It's around. It is well worth having a look at. And if you haven't read it, it's one of those. I personally say I think it's a must read.
And don't accidentally buy the cheapy books that are based on the Alias TV series by J.J. Abrams.
No. I'm gonna go out on a limb here, Richard, because I actually recently read Alias after you told me about it. And I'm going to say that it's actually one of my favorite comic series at this point. So it really did strike a chord with me. I really enjoyed it.
I would agree with you. I remember when I first started reading it back when it came out, and I guess that was back in
2003.
Yeah. I just devoured it. I looked forward to that. It was the first issue I read whenever I picked up my comics.
Yeah.
So it was, it's marvelous. So
well worth having a look at, people. So read that. And for next week, we will do the Sandman's issues 1-8. So read those if you can get your hands on those, and we will come back and talk about that, because neither you or I have read the Sandman, have we?
No, so this will be – it's one of those things I've said. One of those things I've always wanted to read.
Yeah.
So it's a good excuse, this
It kind of makes us finally get in there and read it. And look, Gaiman is a brilliant writer, so I don't know why we haven't read these yet. So.
Oh, because we've got such busy lives, Dave.
Well, there is that.
All right, how many movies did we see this week?
I've done two in a preview and then a few at home.
Yeah, I'm on to my third or fourth, and I've got another two to go. So
actually, we should mention that really quickly, just because it is based on a comic book, which is we saw Tintin.
We did see Tintin this week.
We're not supposed to review it yet, so we won't review it yet, but we will just give you our first impressions. I'm just going to say it's a really pretty movie. It's really pretty.
And I'm going to say, even though I had some problems with it, which we'll talk about later, it's still an amazing action film.
True. It's actually some of Spielberg's best stage action since the Indiana Jones films.
And that, look, absolutely.
Yeah. It's not as good as those films, but the action sequences are amazing.
But it does recall the Indiana Jones films, and that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got issues. When we can review it in detail, which will be early December, we will go into detail about what didn't work and what did work. But look, on first viewing, we saw it. It's really pretty. The 3D is really good. You know, it's well worth having a look at.
Oh, look, absolutely. And it's going to be a monster hit when it comes out next month.
I think so. Yeah, I think it will be. All right, yeah. I think we got to wrap this up. I think that's our time.
Ding, ding.
That's the end of this issue, I think. Now, just one quick wrap up. We will say last week you'll notice we called the show Between the Panels. This week it's Behind the Panels.
Sorry.
There is the Moog again.
That was in my belated let's wrap this up music.
Once again, we are still developing this show, and we decided that Behind the Panels is a better title. So that's why it's Behind the Panels, and it will be that. And it is now, its iTunes feed is now set up. So, of course, if you've only heard this by finding it on our site, geekactually.com, you can now go to iTunes and subscribe. Just look for Excellent. Behind the Panels. Richard, where can people find out more about you?
They can find out more about me. As I said, I'm a film critic by night. So you can find me on therealbits.com. That's reelbits.com. Or you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits. Constantly.
Constantly. Right this very second.
Actually, right now I've got Twitter open.
And you can find me on Twitter as well, at David McVeigh or at Geek Actually. We have two for this site as well. You can find out everything about me just by going to geekactually.com. That's the easiest way to find out about me. There's a big follow us link. And if you click on there, it's got all the Twitter handles, the Facebook pages, all that sort of stuff. So just go there and that's where you'll find me. And remember, comics@geekactually.com is the feedback line for this show. We haven't got a set date or day of publishing this show at this point. It's roughly Thursday, Friday, somewhere around there. It will lock down as this show goes on. But there will be one every week, just not always on time at this point. Anyway.
But like, think of it when, like, you know, an issue of your favorite comic ships a bit late.
That's right. Who is the master of this? Oh, Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith, yeah. are the Kevin Smith. We can't even say we're the Kevin Smiths of podcasting because he's doing that quite well.
He is. It's kind of depressing, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Richard, it's been a pleasure.
As always, Mr. McVeigh.
I'll see you again next week.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield, all those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through.